Okay, so let's start in with Struggle of Sorcerers.
Okay. Ordinarily, the war of the forces of darkness and of light just happens mechanically within the machine. It is uncontrolled and wasted. We must find a way to organize it and make it profitable to our work. So, I'm looking for some help on this one. I've struggled with this struggle of the sorcerers for a number of years and find it interesting. But I'd like to get a better handle on it, particularly as we get toward the end of the chapter.
I may have some reflections on that, but let's get farther into it first because
Okay.
I remember being
Let's just.
stimulated further into the chapter.
Okay, and okay. I'm just going to read the first two paragraphs and then pause because I'm going to need some help on paragraph two. The teacher may set the stage and throw the spotlights on something of importance, but ultimately you are the directors, stage managers, choreographers, dancers, and audience of your work ballet. A ballet of work can be staged if only we know the characteristics of its two powerful mutual antagonists, the Prince of Darkness, who dwells in darkness and whose vision is fixated on the light representing the awakened forces of light, and the Prince of Light, representing the sleeping forces of darkness.
I think I can speak to that.
Please.
To me, what that means, I'll start with the Prince of Light representing the sleeping forces of darkness. My personal understanding of that, I think about people like very religious people who are very convinced that they're right and that they represent light, who people who very much think that everything that's in their conscious mind or their awareness is the only thing that exists because they're not looking at their shadow elements and they're not looking deeply at paradox and controversy because the conscious element is so important where there's a lot of denial about anything that isn't right in the upper layer of awareness. And when we see people like that who are really, really striving to resist the forces of darkness, they represent the sleeping forces of darkness because, unbeknownst to them, in denial, the sleeping forces of darkness are operating and maybe even having their way with them while they think that they're being conscious and just simply doing the right thing. I'm thinking of a former president at the moment. And the Prince of Darkness, who dwells in darkness, whose vision is fixated on the light, representing the awakened forces of light. I'm thinking about corollary for that, those who are comfortable going into the shadow, going into the unconscious, going into the realm where not knowing is primary. I was saying earlier today that a lot of us think that we need to know something before we've experienced it. And going into experience really directly without having any idea what we're going to find there, without any preconception, to me is like the Prince of Darkness. And so the Prince of Darkness who dwells in light, it dwells in darkness. There's a darkness of dwelling and going through life with direct experience without a roadmap from the conscious mind, and whose vision is fixated on the light. In that point of going into that experience, the intention can be to learn and to become light, to become whole, to embrace the darkness. And that can be represent the awakened forces of light, because you need to, you wake up by going through those intense experiences that we need in order to wake ourselves up. So that's my personal interpretation of that. Now we have a comment also by several other people here.
Okay.
Sinhog said, I have always wanted to read a 10,000-word further explanation of the two sorcerers mentioned in this chapter. That may be, maybe I was too wordy. I'm not sure. And
not quite 10,000.
Was that aimed at me? The struggle, Silverdale said, the struggle of sorcerers was the seminal metaphor used by Gurdjieff in 1914 to illustrate the law of three. And would like to maybe hear more about the law of three. Silverdale says, each of us is composed of a trinity of forces. One is developed as our historical personality and is the prince of darkness. Which makes sense, our historical personality and is the prince of darkness. A second force is our spirit, which is normally undeveloped and represents the prince of light. Sinhog says, not meant for Teresa. It was not a sarcastic comment. That's nice to know. And let's see if Silverdale gives us the third force. Not yet. David, did you have a comment?
Well, so let me see. So what's our, who are the the magicians that are struggling here? So it's the, to put it in other terms then, it's the personality. Is that what we're told? I'm not be able to
one
read.
One is
it.
Developed as our historical personality and is the prince
yeah.
of darkness. Which sort of fits with what I was saying. Second force is our spirit, which is normally undeveloped and represents the prince of light. And then our objective is to develop our prince of light and make it the predominant force in relation to our historical personality.
Okay. So then what we're dealing with, in a sense, is the power of this historical personality is very powerful.
Just a sec. Silverdale continues, this blending produces the third force, which serves as the harmonizing, reconciling, spiritualizing force, and allows us to become, quote, godlike.
We're going to touch on that very briefly at the end of the chapter as well, that third force and that concept. But in part, for the purposes of just this part of the chapter, then we're dealing with two powerful forces, this historic personality and this spirit, in a sense, this almost... this fresh, naive, quiet force that's within us. And there they stand. And the Prince of Darkness is powerful and has ruled, is ruling what has occurred. It's his, it's its domain. And that's what is before us. It is the domain. And that's the domain we primarily have lived in. And that's the domain that we're surrounded by is the Prince of Darkness. And so there's this new little thing, a new kid on the block, in a sense. And that kid is the spirit, or this new spirit.
Silverdale said, spirit, the animating force which is continually, quote, raped by the historical personality.
It's not, yeah, and raped is a good, it, what it, it's stolen. It steals the heart of it, the Prince of Darkness does. So there's a little something happens, and boom, it's taken. So we have, so what does the author here say at the beginning of the chapter? He says that this, or in the header, it says, ordinarily, the war of the forces of darkness and light just happens mechanically within the machine, right? It just happens.
So there's no centrum of awareness that seems to be associated with that.
The steamroller is just charging down the road, and it's winning. And so here's what's posed here. We must find a way to organize this battle and make it profitable for our work. Is that exciting or what?
And Silverdale has added, this is why our primary objective is the pacification of the historical personality by doing nothing except observing our manifestations. The primary objective is the pacification of the historical personality by doing nothing except observing our manifestations. I'd like to ask Silverdale, how does doing nothing pacify the historical personality? What is that process?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a good question to entertain. And it might take him a while to make a response. So, David, it looks like you had something else to say.
We're on point with that.
Okay. Give me a moment to think. It's like
That's
using
what
the
said.
Yes. It's like the magic eight ball. You know, you ask a question and then you wait for it to surface.
Overdale actually is a magic eight ball.
I know.
You know, you turn it. Curious.
Yeah. Comes up in a little triangle. Laugh out loud.
Yeah. Unusual, but you get used to it. So we have the opportunity here of developing this just mechanicality. It just goes on. And so what we're saying is that war is going to go on. Does it make sense to us? I pose this to everybody in the class. Does it make sense to us that this just continues mechanically? That's life as it is in the greater cycle out there. That it just goes on. People just rarely question themselves. Life just goes on, however it does.
So there's conflicts, and it's interesting to see that the conflicts, a lot of times we're not aware that we're in conflict at all in that state. And I'm saying this for the people who will be listening later, some of them. It's people a lot of times get a lot of body tension or get psychosomatic symptoms or a lot of different problems because those conflicts go on mechanically without any participation in them.
So what are we posing here?
I thought it was a question rather than a rhetorical question.
It's a question, yeah.
Feeling it, observing it, especially watching the sequence of the response through all of the different muscle and nerve and energy pathways and the way it impacts the breath and the way the tone of voice changes and the way the body weight shifts and the way that the machine will begin to start its little projects with the hands and the whole nine yards.
Okay.
And Sinhug said, by passively observing our manifestations. And I'm thinking there's something very active and very alive about this type of observation. Okay, Silverdale has said something. Do you want to continue or you want me to read it?
No, go ahead and read it.
We begin by accepting the idea that we are involuntary slaves. We can't change ourselves at all. Then we begin to watch ourselves as though we're in a movie theater.
So we, here we enter into this chapter, the struggle of the sorcerers, and we have this, this is what we're found with. We find ourselves, in a sense, we find ourselves as we are. Because once we start the work, in whatever form we start it, once you start it, that's your starting point, okay? And you find yourself as you are in this personality. And then as we go through chapter one, you start to take inventory of it, and you're just shocked at the fact, my God, most of what I do, or most of what I do, is utterly mechanical. I have no idea what's going on. And now we're posing that these two princes are at war. We're adding a new element to just being fully mechanical. Ordinarily, their warfare is not organized and therefore is useless for our work. We must find a way to organize their war and make it profitable for our work in much the same way that a munitions manufacturer and industrialists foment and feed a war by providing material and continually aggravating the antagonists against each other. It is in our interest to keep them in continual struggle.
Okay, just a sec. We have comments.
Curious, huh?
So, yes. So Zen said, I think it is considered actively observing the manifestation. This is why it can be useful to us. And Silverdale said, this enables us to pacify the historical personality. I like that term. This enables us to pacify the historical personality and begin gradually to do nothing. This enables, and I'm going to put my own footnote in here, that when we do something, sometimes we're interfering with the observation by going into another mechanicality. So I'll read his comment again. This enables us to pacify the historical personality and begin gradually to do nothing. This enables the spirit, Prince of Light, to become stronger over a period of years, like a child growing up. We are the, quote, parents to this process. And I wanted to respond to what you're saying. You're emphasizing the word princes and sorcerers. And, well, you should, as you talk about getting the conflict even more worked up and aggravating it. And the point of that intensification of the struggle is because we become very, very much more invested in it. We can begin to hear and sense it going on in ourselves, and we also recognize how very powerful those different elements. The will to sleep is a very powerful element, and when we have the will to wake up, which we've developed through work wish, in the last chapter, and we have the will to sleep and the will to awaken, then we get some friction going, and that friction produces energy, and that energy produces both awareness and engagement and sensation and even electricity.
Okay. So, to jumping ahead just a little bit, in order to function, the machine has somewhere along the lines placed buffers as isolating devices between these inner contradictions. It is because of these buffers that we are ordinarily able to exist very calmly despite our continually shifting centrum of gravity and a different set of opinions, ideas, and moods every moment or two. Now, do people have a sense of what is meant by the word buffer in this particular context?
I'd like you to say more about it.
I see it just literally like in a machine, like in a motor. There are like motor mounts, and there are these heavy rubber devices that buffer the road vibration to the motor.
Those aren't rubber baby buggy buffers, are they?
No. They're like that. I'm being told they're like that. That's exactly right. But they keep things two parts separate so that you don't see the two at the same time. You're not able to see the two at the same time. How could it be that you have utterly contradictory parts within ourselves and they're in the same thingy, the same envelope, so to speak, and here they are?
Zazen says, I think of compartmentalized thinking as buffered. One hand does not know what the other is doing. Exactly.
And that's the way we tend to exist.
Or
that's
we think we think we're awake and we don't know what either hand is doing.
Yeah. And then he goes on to say, it is thanks to the incessant chatter of automatic inner dialogue and running commentary on our experience, which goes on continuously between these isolated fragmentary identities, that we attribute to ourselves what we call consciousness. So most of the time what's happening is the yama yama in the brain. The monkey mind is just going on. So it's hard to get to a place where the personality is doing nothing. It's just this incessant mental chatter is feeding and maintaining these buffers.
Silverdale,
so you're sitting
said,
there.
Okay, sorry. The historical personality is fragmented and fractured. The spirit is a unified whole.
So most of the time we live in the historical personality. We live in that world. And now we're posing a different possibility. So have we got to a place where we have a feel for how we make this battle something that is usable for our work, this constant battle that's going on anyway?
Well, I have a feeling for that in myself. I want to see what other people think. Sinhog said, yes, I think this has been useful. For me, I know sometimes I get into states where I can't not notice what the different parts are thinking, where
there you go.
I'm listening to both sides of, or maybe three or four or five sides of conflict internally, almost like watching a tennis match with too many people on the court, and it gets really heated up. There can be a lot of distress when the observer self isn't large enough or quiet enough to have enough ballast to outweigh some of those other voices.
Does anybody have an example of when a buffer is violated and it just slaps you in the face, so to speak?
Silverdale said, pacifying the historical personality allows us to accumulate energy, which serves as nourishment for the growth of the spirit. Again, exactly like a child growing up, day by day. That's nice.
Yeah.
David, do you have an example of the buffer coming apart and slapping you in the face?
Well, I'm just thinking one simple one that we can see is like if people have a particular imagination of what they sound like, what they look like, etc. And then you see yourself, you see a picture of yourself, or you catch a glimpse of yourself in a mirror as you're walking down, or you hear your voice recorded, and then you hear it again, and you go, and that, like, there's a small shock there.
Or a big one.
And that's, pardon?
Or a big one.
Or a big one. And that's a shock, that's a buffer being violated at that moment.
Okay, so Sinhog said, yes, good example, David. Happy Miss said, totally frightening. And before that, Zazen said, his example, when I can see myself feeling hostile and doing my best to act kind.
Nice.
Very nice.
Here's another interesting one. Let's say that you have two different lifestyles, like, I don't know, maybe you bowl, and then you also work as a high-end engineer or something, and suddenly people from both worlds, you meet with both of them at the same time, and there's like this, you're unsettled at that moment, because it's not that there are two worlds. To those two people, it's their world, but it's two inner worlds in yourself starting to conflict together.
That's a nice example.
I was just thinking of that. Okay, I want to get something before we end. I'm at the bottom of page 74. In a human biological machine in which each buffer encapsulates a fragmentary identity, a continually shifting centrum of gravity, continually shifting, changing in what may appear to be a random pattern, provides the appearance of a very complicated gem of many facets, but what is actually a very uncomplicated lump of carbon in the grip of certain laws from which we can free ourselves by awakening the machine, the spirit, the prince of light and the prince of darkness, the machine's story. Now catch this. This one blew my mind. The machine's story is a revelation of these contradictions. And by true confession, we can effect their eventual reconciliation, which we can call the process of redemption.
That's so,
so what are the
important.
Elements?
That's such a big deal.
What are the elements?
Go ahead.
The elements, some of the critical elements that we're told, one critical element that we're introduced to is this idea of confession. True confession. And then, because if you can confess, in a sense, confess into the center of that buffer, it's gone. It has no power anymore. That's part of the process. And it's the conflict that keeps it alive. The contradictory, leaving the contradictory parts manifest, keeps that buffer alive. It cheats us from it, in a sense. It cheats us of that energy, as we were talking about earlier. But if you, with a pin prick it, and you just pop it, and what is that? It's called confession. So you confess that element. And I know that that's something that works. Right?
Yeah.
So that's a method. And then there's this strange comment here. That's called the process of redemption. Process of redemption.
Well, it's bringing the pieces back. You're redeeming the
There you go.
The exiles. Redeeming the exiles. The parts of ourselves that we pushed out to the edges.
So what do we mean by redemption? Well, and so Teresa gave us one idea. Any other thoughts of redemption?
Well, we're waiting for the other thoughts to come in. I like the next paragraph. Would you like to read that?
Yeah. By telling the real life history of the machine and not some fragmentary fantasy composed for the protection of the vanity of the machine, thus blending these contradictions, we can repair the past and redeem the machine as a transformational apparatus.
As a transformational apparatus.
As a transfer. So we redeem it. We bring it back instead of we're not lost anymore by feeding and maintaining the great effort of maintaining these contradictions. To blend these contradictions, it is only necessary to remove the buffers which have been placed between them, which is accomplished by the gentle art of exposure to the light of confession. Ordinarily, we know only one third of the life story of the machine at any given moment, depending upon which fragmentary identity is active at the time. In this sense, that side of ourselves which we believe we know best and which seems to us to be our only friend is actually our deadliest enemy in the work. In addition to telling the true story of the machine's life, we can use daily situations with potentially conflicting aims help us stage the battle, the ballet, the struggle of the sorcerers. For example, when we are tired, we can refuse to lie down and rest. We may even do very hard work, like dig a hole or build a wall. We can, if we are attracted to sweets, place before the machine a mound of chocolate. Then, for as long as possible, deny ourselves this little indulgence. We can force our biological machine to work at different tempo than usual. We can refuse to express pleasure or displeasure in the usual ways. We can intentionally keep company with someone who ordinarily repels us, especially one whose chemistry repels us. To force conflicting ideas to reconciling, we must be able to, if necessary, lie down and at the same time convince ourselves that we are standing. Small conflicts are easy to arrange. Later, to stage a real ballet, we must entangle these two powerful sorcerers in a genuine struggle for survival. The ballet must have a great conflict in order to attract and hold a struggle between these two great forces. No matter which side wins, it comes to the same end, because both roles are played by the same actor, the empty struggling against the void.
Okay. Piff said the process of redemption is following the reverberation in the machine with the objective attention.
Can you please say that again?
The process of redemption is following the reverberation in the machine with the objective attention. And
okay.
Then Silverdale said, from the moment of the unity of our conception, we begin to experience division, multiplication, and diversification. Redemption is a way to redemption is to find a way to return this division, multiplication, and diversification into unity. Ginger Rogers said, nicely stated, and Silverdale added, This is the struggle of the sorcerers, how to balance unity in the midst of multiplicity and diversity while experiencing continual division. I'm going to read that one more time. This is the struggle of the sorcerers, how to balance unity in the midst of multiplicity and diversity while experiencing continual division. Anything more, David?
So, do we have an exercise here?
I don't believe we had an explicitly stated exercise. You're thinking of one.
How are you guys going to do the chapter this week? Remember, it's the practical work on self part.
Well, for me, I don't know yet. It's going to take me a minute to come up with something real.
He has one example there of setting up the struggle where he says, when we are tired, we can refuse to lie down and rest. I mean, that's just one little small thing, but or we could intentionally keep company with someone who ordinarily repels us, especially one whose chemistry repels us.
Yeah.
I've been doing that. Only my problem with the first part, with refusing to rest when you're tired, that's mechanical for me. I do that all the time.
Well, yeah, you have to use your own intelligence to establish the struggle, for sure.
But I did the other day. I was really tired, and I just wanted to just sit around, and I made myself go dig out a large plant in the yard. It was just like, and then I got a totally different kind of energy. Zazen said, I don't know if you meant because or cause. Cause the conflict by when I feel tired, choose to act instead of rest. This generally happens in the afternoon. Or cause the conflict between the two parts, I would imagine. When I feel tired, choose to act instead of rest. Sinhog said, page 74, paragraph 3, is how we did it in the LAPWOS group some time ago.
Okay.
What is there?
I'll read it real quick. In the study of these buffered contradictions, we must notate and categorize to ourselves the various states of our fragmentary identities, which we are able to observe as they become active in the machine. It is to these fragmentary states, not to ourselves, that we should attribute all of our attitudes, ideas, power, initiative, presence, and good taste. I think that's the one he meant. The third paragraph?
Yes. So, if nobody else has any comments, then I will close the group for this evening. Remind everybody that we'll have the sound files posted shortly, both for the next chapter, if you'd rather hear it than read it, and adding our course tonight, our talk tonight, onto the internet site. And thank you very much for showing up, and being with us and contributing. I think there was some great discussion tonight, and very much appreciate everybody for pitching in.
Thanks for coming, everyone.
And
see you next week.
Silverdale said, thank you, David and T, for facilitating the discussion among friends this evening. And thanks again, everyone, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.